Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Terry's always been staunchly anti-conjunction.
Hi there, everyone. This is Patrick Foster. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Rockin' the Suburbs podcast. I want to welcome you on behalf of my co-host, co-founder, and good friend Jim Linehan and myself. Thanks for tuning in. This week, we have been working on a series with the excellent DC band Dot Dash, going through their really great new album, Madman in the Rain, track by track, and getting the band's take on all the songs that make up this excellent 12-track record. We're going to jump back in today. We're going to be on the second side of the record, so we're getting a little deeper into it. But before we do that, I want to remind everyone who listens to this podcast on a regular basis or anyone who's hearing this that we'd love to have your picks for the best song and best album of 2022. You can get those to us, either create a voice file on your phone, a voice memo, or record on your home recording equipment and attach it to an email. You can do an MP3 or a WAV file or an M4A or whatever you got and send it to rock@suburbspod.com and just title it Best of 2022. During the month of January, we're going to round all those calls up, play them on the podcast so everybody can learn about all this great music that came out in 2022. And I know if form holds that I'll be finding out a whole bunch of stuff that I didn't know about as the year ended. And Jim and I are going to be providing our own picks too at the end of all that. So please join us. We'd love to have your picks and get those in as soon as you can. And the other option for that is you can call our suburban party line, 612-440-1984. And you can leave a message there, just like calling up a phone line. I think you have about 3 minutes to get your best song and best album in. If you want to tack on a couple of honorable mentions or other ones you were really into, you could do that. But we're just going to focus on the song and the album you choose. All right. Now, today, we're going to come back into the Dot Dash conversation about Madman in the Rain, and the song we're going to start off with today is called Trip Over Clouds. And right before we played this song, Hunter Bennett, the bass player, asked me if I could detect an unlikely influence in this song. So that's the challenge for you listeners as well. Can you detect an unlikely influence from this clip? All right, here is Trip Over Clouds by Dot Dash.
Joan of Arc, I put the fire out, but beware of sparks. It's a lost art, playing a magic while wrestling in.
Okay, no, I don't know what it is.
You got a guess, Patrick? And I'll give you a hint. It's on the there's sort of like a bass solo, and there's the first pass, and then the second pass is when this unlikely influence is being channeled.
It didn't jump out to me. I'm going to take a crazy...
Are you talking about the part where you have that little staggered riff there?
Yeah. But what were you going to guess, Patrick?
I was going to take a stab at this and guess Mike Watt.
Iron Maiden.
Oh.
Okay, so I'm not so far off. I mean, Watt was influenced by the old heavy rock guys,
it's
right?
The third. Yeah. It sounds kind of funky on a bass, but you know how Iron Maiden, they would do the lead and then the other guy would do the third off of there?
That's
what's going on there.
That's very cool.
This is the oldest song on the record. I happen to remember we played this song for the first time at one of those shows we did. Remember we did that little Gettysburg, Frederick, a two-date tour of Gettysburg and Frederick with Miss Lonely Heart. And I remember that was the first time we played the song, which was sort of right after Proto Retro came out. So it was one that was around for a good while.
That's my favorite song on the album.
Oh. Yeah, it's a good one.
I think most people's favorite song, most clear-headed, well-thinking people.
What makes it your favorite, Danny?
Oh, well, God, I don't want to make it all about me, but Hunter and Terry will tell you, I don't ever brag about my drum beats. I'm usually really critical of myself, but this is like one of those songs where I really like what I'm playing. And I like the sort of offbeat fill that goes like around the toms. And I just like the feel of the song a lot. I don't know. There's just something about it, you know. There's no predicting why something will make you love it or hate it, you know. But that's my favorite song on the track.
And Pops is right. I mean, he is almost as critical of his drumming as Terry and I are of it. And
not at all. I think it's amazing.
No, I'm kidding. Danny's drumming on this and on you know all of these songs is really really great. And I mean, because again, he really listens to like what I'm playing, what Terry's playing, what the vocals are doing, and he comes up with stuff to play along with it.
Definitely. Well, and as someone who didn't even want to do this track by track thing, because I thought it was so incredibly self-indulgent, and I don't like the record, you guys really do balance the playing on every song really well. I mean, I think there's something about too, having played in a trio for a little while, that there's kind of a center you find with three instruments, right? We all sort of have to contribute just enough to make the song, you know, balance. And I think you guys do that remarkably well throughout this record. It's just fabulous. You sound like an amazingly groomed and mature and masterful band on this. But having said all that, are there ever times, you know, where any of you come up with a part and somebody else will say, no, that doesn't work whatsoever. Like, that's completely wrong for what we're doing.
Not with each other. I mean, I don't know that like we've ever been so critical where, you know, we're like, oh my God, that's awful. Don't do that. You know, but certainly and there's a song on this record, and I'm not going to say which one it is, that I was really harshly critical of my drumming on it, to the point where after we had finished recording, and I think it was like one of the last songs we did, I was worn out by that time and just not feeling overly motivated. And I was like, I don't want that song on the record, you know. But I don't think we've ever made those kind of comments to each other. I mean, people will come up with suggestions, you know, somebody will say, hey, try this or try that, or, you know.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think as long as we've done it, it's been, I don't think that's ever happened. I mean, I think again, I sort of don't just like, hey, how about this chord change? Like I bring in like sort of fully fleshed things. And then these guys just instinctively, it's really weird. They just both drop right in like they've been playing it forever, and they may, which is really really odd, and I've been seeing it for, you know, a long time, and it's just, it's like how do they do that? And they may fine-tune their own stuff a little bit, but it's incredible, like they'll just drop in instinctively. And so I think it's maybe good that I kind of only bring in things that I feel really good about, so that I don't know, it gives them a chance to hear it, and they're not just like, well, what do you mean? You know, it's kind of a thing, and it gives them something to work with. So yeah, I mean, it's been great, and it's been really good as a trio.
Okay. One thing I want to mention before we go to this next song, Terry, you enjoy some interesting punctuation. I will say that. I'm a fan. This one has a slash.
Yeah. I think about that. Like, I didn't want too many, this is really stupid, who would do this, but too many ands, like dead and gone could have been dead and gone, so it became dead gone. Space junk and satellites used to be space junk and satellites, but when I sang it, the and really threw me off. I was like, space junk and satellites. There's something about the and that just kind of made it a little too long. So I just said space junk satellites. So I made that a comma, like Wolves Lower or something. I'm looking at some of the other titles. Yeah, I just didn't want like a bunch of like da 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 and this, da 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 and
that's
that.
Right.
Yeah. So I just use other things, ampersands or slashes.
Terry's always been staunchly anti conjunction. And, you know, I think this album is just a logical
That's right. So later on, listeners, I know you get excited about this. I'm going to tease this. Later on, there's an equal sign. You get that in there. But first off,
that's right. I forgot about that. Yeah, that's really Animal Stone was going to be one word, and then it became two because Woke Up Dreaming is one word.
Oh, there's
word.
That too. Yeah, so, there's the smushed together anyway. Words. Yeah. Okay, but this one has the slash, so it's Saints / Pharaohs. Have on this one?
It used to be longer, and then we shortened it at the end because it just felt like it didn't need another verse or, you know. It's kind of a dreamy semi-rocker. What do you guys think?
This is one of those ones that I think came out really, really well when we recorded it. Probably better than it's ever sounded when we play it live. It's weird. You can't really predict what's going to come out really well versus what'll come out sort of just like how you play it. And this is one where it was really a pleasant surprise how well it came out.
And this, now that I think of it, this is one that came after COVID or once COVID started. Airwaves and this, I think. So somehow that just dawned on me.
And it really does sound, and it's one that we haven't really been playing live for a while. And I don't know if it'll ever get back in the set again, but it's the recorded version has that sort of dreamy Cure-like riff that sort of drops in over the top that neither Hunter nor I had ever heard before because we never rehearsed it that way. It's something Terry came up with on his own before the recording session and played it live or played it in the studio. And that, you know, the first time we heard it was when Sanoff sent us the mixes. And my first reaction was, oh my God, it sounds like The Cure. And then I was like, wow, that sounds like The Cure, you know, because I think it's like a really nice sort of touch.
Well, I want to ask you guys a question based on what Terry said there about the third verse. So you look at the track listings, the longest track is 3:15, which I absolutely adore. I love that, you know, all these songs are brief and yet they feel full. But for you guys, how do you know when a song's over? I mean, how do you know when it's time to say, that's it, we're going to think of an ending?
When I start gasping for air and reaching for the oxygen tank. So,
part of the thing that, and I don't think it's obvious, but a lot of our songs, even though they're kind of traditional in some senses, I mean, I don't think we play them. I think we play them in a full-on way, but they're kind of traditional, at least in some ways. But a lot of them only have two verses, as distinct from the standard sort of three-verse thing. So right off the bat, that shortens a lot of them. And I just like short songs. I always have, but not, you know, again, not like snippets or sort of like I want it to be a full thing, an actual real song. But I'm always impressed back in, I think we were talking about this one time, with you guys, like back when, you know, you'd flip through records that when I flipped through records of Plan 9 in Richmond, I used to go all the time and I'd always look at record, you know, pull it out and look at the used sleeve and just, you know, how long are the things? If they were short songs, I was like, oh, these people are probably pretty good. You know what I mean? Whereas if you get like a lot of like 454s and stuff, you're like, huh. Oh, you know, maybe I'll put this one back.
Technically, a lot of them only have one verse. Like Forever Far Out has one verse. There's an instrumental part that would be the second verse, but like one verse.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I think I started to kind of push that. Well, if I can drop a third, how about drop a second? But I think it sounds okay. You know, I mean, I think it works. So
it's economical.
Yeah.
Economy, yet they feel full and complete. Yeah. So it's really interesting, and I think a difficult art to pull off, to be able to write it at that time and make it feel full. But of course, you know, when you go back and look at music history, there was a point where suddenly songs started to become longer, and yeah, before that they weren't. And you know, the economy of punk certainly plays into what you guys do in a very full way. So that's very interesting, to think about it that way. And it doesn't ever feel, you know, conscious, at least when you're watching your guys play or listening to your records, that you just cut it off for the sake of cutting it off. So
there's no dot dash rock opera in the works or anything like that, right?
No, not as yet.
Never say never.
Right.
I always feel like it's like, you don't like that one? Here's another one.
Yeah, well, that's true too, yeah.
Didn't we have a song on Searchlights that went on? I think it was the last track on Searchlights that had all that banging piano on it.
Yeah.
Right next to last song. That may be the longest song we've ever done. So like 5 minutes or something.
All right. Well, next up, under 3 minutes, is Lonesome Sound.
Lonesome Sound.
You heard the lonesome sound, or stood alone in a crowd with the wind at your back and the sun in your eye. When you hear a bell ring, an angel just died. Tried to join a ping pong club, but the sign on the door read all full up. With the wind at your back and the sun in your eye. When you hear a bell ring, an angel just died. Alive, alive, we're still alive, 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 we're still alive.
Okay, somebody mentioned this word earlier. The one word I wrote down in my notebook for this song was jangly.
Huh?
For sure. That's the most, probably the jangliest one on there. For sure. Yeah.
You know, I think everybody hears things slightly differently. And the first time I heard the mixes of this, I was struck by how Terry was harmonizing with himself. And to me, it really reminded me of like Simon and Garfunkel and the Byrds and a lot of that 60s sort of stuff. Yeah. It's just like really beautiful sort of harmonization. But this is an instance where, like, when we were playing the songs in the basement, it was deliberately, I think we were trying to have it have like more of an atmospheric type thing when we were playing it. And again, another pleasant surprise when it comes back from being mixed with all the extra parts and so forth.
Love the intro.
Yeah. Yeah.
Terry wanted to cut it.
Well, did he really?
I loved it so much. I wanted to cut it, but, no, I'm glad.
I think it's because Hunter and I came up with it or something. Maybe that's what he said.
Oh, I think it's great.
You didn't come up with that. I came up with that. But no, you guys were right. You guys were right. I kind of thought, oh, it doesn't really do anything. But I think it's good. I'm glad it's there.
All right. Terry Banks discussing the song Lonesome Sound from Dot Dash's excellent Madman in the Rain album. I like the intro, as I said. I'm glad Terry likes it, too. I'm glad they left it in. Let's put it that way. Want to thank Terry Banks, guitar and vocals, Hunter Bennett on bass, Danny Ingram on drums for joining us to discuss this record. There are three songs left, and we are going to talk about those tomorrow. So on behalf of Jim Linehan, I am Patrick Foster. Want to thank Dot Dash again. And we will talk to you guys with the conclusion of Dot Dash's Track by Track tomorrow.
You don't like that one? Here's another one.